Hello. Welcome to the Intellectual Agrarian Podcast, where we grow smarter with philosophy from the farm. On the show, we learn from the stories and skills, ideas and insights of farmers and agrarians from around the world. I'm your host, Terrence Lehue. Our guest today is Michael Bell from Dallas Half Acre Farm in Dallas, Texas. Together, we'll be discussing the updates on Michael's farm since we had him on the show last, his new property, commercial container growing, and much, much more. You don't want to miss out on today's episode with Michael Bell. Michael Bell, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been a couple years since I've been on, I think.
Yeah, it's been 2018. So if you don't mind, since it has been a bit, if you don't mind giving a brief biographical sketch for the audience, that would be fantastic.
I'm located in Dallas, Texas, a few miles outside of Dallas, Texas, southeast. I was pretty much in downtown Dallas up until last summer, and I'm a full-time teacher. So, and I drive 30 miles back and forth from my house to my work. Well, a job came open at my wife's school 5 minutes from my house.
Oh,
and
nice.
PE jobs, yeah, and PE jobs don't come open very often. Mm-hmm. You know, people get the job and they retire from that job, so they don't come open. So I said, you know, I really need, and it was a raise. You know, I got a $4,000 raise, so that helped make the decision, plus less driving and everything. Uh-huh. So I went ahead and took the job and loved the school, loved working with my wife, loved, you know, all of it went really well, except for my farm, which was 5 minutes from my old school. But it worked out okay because I went before school and after school, and, you know, it worked out okay. But now, since I'm not going over there hardly at all, I decided to, you know, sell that piece of property and find something over here with the money from the sale of that property. And I did that. You know, everything worked out really well. Found a nice little 0.35 acre lot that's halfway between my house and my new school. So, I mean, literally it's a 2 minute diversion, take an exit. You know, and I'm there in 2 minutes. So location is wonderful. It's right off of I-20. You know, like I said, about 5 minutes from my house. So I bought that and started rolling in that in the fall.
So what does it take to get the new piece of property ready for farming? What does your process usually look like for that?
Well, I bought it in the fall, and it was too late to really do anything in the fall because I bought it in November. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't get anything ready for, you know, even broccoli or anything like that. I just didn't have time. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to cover it with my tarp. That's what worked at my old farm. So cover it tarps, kill it for 3 or 4 months, kill the grass and everything. I'll pull it back and just have a nice early start to the spring. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I did that. I mowed it. It's pretty funny. I'm out there mowing a third of an acre with a push mower, but it was just nice, clean, open land. Had a couple little trees in the middle of it, but, you know, grass was good. So I just mowed it, tarped it, and I'd go then do a few things, measure out a few things, put a couple of stakes, no big deal. And then in the spring, I went over there one, you know, on a Saturday. I guess it was, well, I say spring. In Texas, you can have spring-like conditions in January. You know, it's some days it's 60 and other days it's 15. So I had a nice 60-degree weekend. So I went over there and I was like, well, let's go ahead and, you know, pull the tarps back and get the beds lined out and everything. So I did. Well, it had rained like a week before that, pretty heavy. And as soon as I pulled the tarp back, I knew I was screwed because there was water standing. And like I said, it'd been a week since it rained, and it wasn't even a massive rainstorm or anything. It was just like a normal winter rain. Mm-hmm. I think we got like an inch or so. And there was water standing everywhere. It was swamp. I mean, it was awful. And I told myself, you're in a world of hurt. And sure enough, I dug down, and if you garden or you farm, you know that sound of clay and the suction of the water.
Yeah.
And I just pushed the shovel down in the ground just to see, and you just hear that slurping noise of that clay, and it literally made me nauseous at my stomach because I knew I was screwed. And I said, okay, let's see how bad this is. So, I did some, you know, soil can be really good right here, and you move 10 feet and it's not too bad. You move another 10 feet and it's actually really good. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case for my spot. You know, it was pretty much solid clay everywhere I went, with about maybe, if I was lucky, an inch of topsoil.
Oh.
So I said, okay, well, I'll cover crop it this spring, and I'll just haul in a whole lot of compost for the rest of the area. You know, I'll spend some money and just haul in compost. So I did that, hauled in some compost, made a couple of, I think they're like 25-foot beds, 25-foot long, and tried to plant in it. You know, I planted some radishes and you know, beets and, you know, easy stuff that should do okay. Mm-hmm. And then it rained again. And this, I had one of my tunnels put up. Mm-hmm. So the bed was inside my tunnel, completely covered, and it rained. And I went over there the next day, and the inside of my tunnel was flooded.
Oh.
Because the water seeps up mm-hmm. from underneath the ground in that clay soil.
Yeah.
It literally seeps up. It's like the water table is really high. I don't know. I don't even really care about the science behind it. All I know is it really screwed me up.
Yeah.
So what do you do
in that kind of situation?
I've talked to probably 10 different cover crop experts. I even had a conversation with Gabe Brown, you know, the guy up in North Dakota. He's written a book, one of the most famous people, knowledgeable people in the world. And he said, all you can do is just keep cover cropping it and, you know, get some organic matter down in there, but it's going to take some time. And I said, time is in months. And he laughed. He goes, oh no, it's going to take you 2 or 3 years to make that. So to get that root matter in that ground and break it up. And even then you're still going to have to add in some compost. Cause I sent him a video of what it looked like. And he's like, that's about as bad as it gets out there, Mike. So I talked to a guy from Johnny's. Literally, I've talked to every seed company's cover crop expert, sent them the same video, and all of them say the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them say plant alfalfa because it has huge root mass. Some says plant more beans because the nitrogen will help break up the clay, and just on and on and on. So basically, moving forward, I've got two tunnels, or two areas where tunnels go. I have my one 80-foot tunnel that I put up back in the spring, or late winter, mm-hmm. January. And then I have another spot where another tunnel was supposed to go, and it's going to be completely cover cropped. Hopefully this weekend, if it will quit raining. It's rained down here like 7 straight days. So as soon as it dries up just enough for me to be able to walk around without getting my boots stuck in the clay, mm-hmm. I'm going to cover crop it very, very heavy with a nice spring summer mix and just let it grow.
What's in that mix? Just out of curiosity.
It's a lot of legumes. It's alfalfa. It has some daikon radishes in it. And then hairy vetch.
Mm, yeah.
It had a crimson vetch in it. Had three or four clover. Had two or three different clovers in it. Mm. Clemson clover and I think white clover, maybe. Okay. I didn't make the seed mix. I told the guy at what is that seed company? True Leaf,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Sounds right.
Seed company? Yeah, I think that's who it was. I explained to him what my problem was, and he goes, let me talk with some other people, and then they just formulated this mix for me.
Oh, that's nice.
And, yeah, and he said, just send us pictures. You know, they charged me for it, but he said, we'll spend the time to formulate this just for your needs, but we want pictures. And I said, okay, you know, no big deal. So I'm going to send him pictures when I get it going. So I'm going to cover crop as much seed as I have for the other than that one tunnel that I already have put up. Mm-hmm. And then inside the other tunnel, I'm actually planting in 25-gallon buckets or pots or whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm. What are you using for the growing medium in the containers?
I'm doing a couple of different things just to see what works. Actually, I'm doing three things to see what works best. One of them, there's a bag of compost at Lowe's, and it's made here in Dallas.
Oh,
and
cool.
I went completely blank. It's a white bag with a blue farmer on it. I can't think of the name. Well, off the top of my head, I've bought 100 bags of it, but I still can't think of the name of it. But it's one of the cheaper ones, but I tried it out with some lettuce in the fall, and it worked really well. So I'm using that, and then I'm using some potting soil, Bark 18, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
It's just it's a potting mix. It's a lot fluffier. So I've got my three mixes are the one bucket will be all compost. from Lowe's. Another bucket will be all potting soil, and then another bucket will be half and half. Mm-hmm. And then of course all three of the different types of buckets will have the same amendments in it, which are rock phosphate, worm castings, and a special organic fertilizer mix that the nursery that I buy from here in Dallas, they make it there. It's like their own specialty mix.
Oh, cool.
So I'll mix all three of those together and put the same amount in all three of those. That way I know which of the mix works best.
How do the worm castings work? I've heard a couple people use them.
Oh, worm castings are amazing. And if you can, I mean, they just come, it looks like dirt. You know, they have no smell to them or anything. You can put as much of it in there as you want. Of course, more isn't always better, but it won't hurt anything. It just gets to the point where you just waste your money because worm castings can get a little bit expensive, you know. So I put about a half of a solo cup in the hole before I transplant like a tomato plant or a banana plant or something like that. Not a banana plant. Good Lord.
I was going to say, wait, what? Bananas?
Yeah. I wish. But sweet banana peppers is what I meant. Like, yes, I dig the hole, then I put the, you know, half a solo cup of worm castings in there and then mix the soil all up and then just put the plant on top of it. And you don't have to worry about it burning your roots or, like, there's no adverse effects to it at all.
One of the things that I was thinking about as I was prepping for the interview is that as I'm just thawing out here in Des Moines right now, I mean, when do you start your season for 2020?
It's kind of weird because I don't really have it. Like, I have seasons where I grow stuff, but I never stop growing. I just transition.
Okay.
So like lettuce, I grow year round. Then like tomatoes, if I'm growing, like sun golds are kind of hard to find, you know, it's hit or miss if you're going to get them this season. So I always grow my sun golds and my black cherries from seed. Tomatoes, I always grow those from seed. And I usually start those between December 25th and January 1st on my Christmas break. Mm-hmm. So I'll start tomato seeds then. Peppers are really easy to find here because everybody just wants the generic bell pepper or sweet banana pepper. So I just buy those from the nursery in six packs, mm-hmm. usually the first week of March, the end of February, the first week of March. And then I pot them up until all the frost is good and I don't have to worry about, you know, taking care of them. Mm-hmm. So I guess my spring, summer crops usually start around spring break. I planted quite a few tomatoes and peppers today, actually.
Mm-hmm. I can readily see in my head peppers and tomatoes in containers. Lettuce, for some reason, that doesn't seem to fit in my head. Are you going to be trying to grow any of your lettuces in containers, or how are you planning on growing that this year?
No, I have a buddy of mine that lives less than 2 minutes from my house. His wife kept my two kids when they were babies. She was my babysitter. I've known her from 10 years. And they have an acre lot. And he's 65, and, you know, he hates mowing and everything. And after I sold my farm, I was talking to him, you know, just shooting the bull. And I said, I got to find some land. I got people waiting on my lettuce. And he goes, well, use mine. I don't want to mow the damn thing. So I started looking around. I was like, you know what? You're right. Like, this is a really good spot. Full sun, soil sucks. Absolutely sucks. But I'm only growing lettuce. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's not real high nutrient. It doesn't pull a ton of nutrients. And, you know, you don't plant it deep like you do a tomato, so it doesn't matter. So I just brought in some compost, made 4 50-foot beds. And I grow my lettuce at his place underneath the tunnel. And then, so I've got my lettuce at his place, and then I've got my new farm going and got all my container stuff and everything over there. And it's working out pretty well. I mean, during the summer, although I'm a teacher, so I'll have it off, it'll suck kind of driving back and forth trying to water everything. Mm-hmm. But eventually I'm hoping I can get this soil at my new farm good enough to where I can just use it for lettuce. Mm-hmm. And make that new tunnel that I'm growing all the cover crop in, I can make that my lettuce tunnel.
Okay.
And then continue to grow in my containers for a year or two. And then while I'm working on another spot for my third tunnel, and then just kind of keep adding you know, adding to the soil health and everything, trying to break that clay up.
Restoring the land one piece at a time, kind of.
Very small piece at a time, yeah.
How was your 2019 season?
2019 season was really, it was going really well. Spring was awesome. Best 4 months I've ever had.
Good.
You know, and then June and July got here and it got hot, but I still, you know, still kept growing. And then I got that job July 15th here in Forney, mm-hmm. which shouldn't have mattered. But when I knew I wasn't going to be going back to school in Duncanville, like because I started school the second week of August. So I had like 3 weeks before my summer was over. Mm-hmm. And I knew I wasn't going to grow anything in the fall. And it was already 100 degrees every single day by July 15th. Ew. I kind of just, oh, it sucks. I just shut it down. You know, I was like, well, I'll be in Mesquite. Let's start looking for new land. I started taking tunnels down, you know, because the storms in Dallas, you know, in Texas in July and August, they can come up in 10 minutes, destroy your entire place, and be sunny again in 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. So, like, literally every day that you have, like, a tunnel up or something, you run the risk of losing everything. So the day I got that job, I told my wife, I said, I'm going to go harvest everything that I have right now, and I'm going to start taking stuff down since we're moving, since I'm coming back over here closer to home and won't be at my farm. So started taking everything down, and you know, I didn't really do a whole lot until my buddy said I could farm his place, and that was in the first week of September. Mm-hmm. So I went over there and threw a tunnel up real quick and started going there, and then, of course, it takes 8 weeks to get some Salanova going for salad mix. So overall, considering the circumstances, I had a really good 2019. On paper, the math and the money doesn't look that good, but I did the best I could with the amount of time and the amount of space that I had.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, at that, that's the way that some seasons just work that way, and it sounds like things are going to generally improve, and you've got a great plan in place. One of the things that I'm a little curious on here, because I know this was an issue with the last piece, was water. What are you doing for water on the new property? Is, I mean, at the moment, it sounds like you have plenty of water.
I have more. I can't wait for a drought. Yeah, I don't have water on my place yet. It's going to cost me $3,500, which is way better than my other place.
Mm-hmm.
And, it'll be easy to do. I just have to write the $3,500 check to have the water, because they've got the plumber has to run about 80 yards of pipe and then put in everything. And so it's going to cost about $3,500. And right now I don't feel like I need to spend that kind of money.
Yeah.
Because I'm not set up. Everything that I'm growing, especially in the pot,
mm-hmm.
I can water pretty handedly, pretty easily. Plus I'm wood chipping everything, so it's okay. Going to hold the moisture. I have good compost, you know, I have good soil, so I don't feel like the watering is going to be a big deal. So all I did, and I'll send you a picture if you just want to see it, I built out of pallets, I built a water collection is all it is. Mm-hmm. It's 10 foot wide, and right now it's 24 feet long, and but I made it to where I can make it up to 48 feet if I want to. And it runs down, you know, it's got a slope to it, runs into a 4-inch gutter, runs into a 325 water tote, and which is sitting on blocks. And then whenever I need water, I have two water totes. So after all this rain, both water totes will be just about full, I'm sure. And then I just hook up a 1/10 horsepower water pump I bought from Harbor Freight, and I got water.
Awesome. It's good that you've got a plan in place, especially considering, I know with the last piece, there wasn't really a ready access to water other than through working with your neighbors, which worked out well, but it's always nice when you can actually have something there. And, you know, having the ability to collect rainwater in this case, I don't want to quite say it's the type of thing customers eat up, but really it is one of those nice things that you can do, because you're just overall saving a lot of money, time, and effort by being able to just reuse what is already falling.
Right, right. And if I was growing lettuce over there, I would have to, you know, pay the $3,500, get me some running water, the whole thing. But since I'm growing in containers and I can control the moisture, and you know, I'm not going to have a ton of stuff that has to be watered. Just like half the time when I grew during the summer, I water less lettuce to cool it off, mm-hmm. not to water it for the roots. I literally water it just because it's 100 degrees and it has to be cooled off. Mm-hmm. Tomatoes, you know, peppers, stuff like that. They just need, the roots need the water, so that it doesn't take near as much water as it does like lettuce.
And with the medium that you're growing in, it retains that moisture really well. It
sounds exactly. Like. Yeah, I think so. And that's one of the things I'm trying to experiment right now, because my stuff, even though I don't need it, the stuff is underneath the tunnels. So it's kind of exciting because I can control everything. It's almost like doing like an aquaponics farm, because you control everything. You control the chemicals, you control the light, the water, everything. I'm doing the same thing. I'm just growing in a 20-gallon, you know, 20-gallon bucket.
Yeah. And really, that is one of those neat things, because like in this case, you're getting to practice and find out what mixture works best. You could compare your different sets and determine what the results are at the end of the day. Those are the types of things that I love about farming, is the experimentation and the little things that you can do to see what works better than others.
Right. Yep. I agree. It's one of those things you want to, I had a great analogy the other day and then I went and forgot it 30 seconds ago. But anyway, it's like making making the perfect sandwich.
Yes.
Like, yeah, I've got bologna and I've got bread. I've got my soil, I've got my pot, and I got my plant. Mm-hmm. Now then, this can be kind of a crappy sandwich, or I can add in rock phosphate, worm castings, and you know this organic fertilizer, and it turns into a BLT. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. In my head, it sounds like a great analogy, but
it really is.
I can control everything it needs, and I'm a control freak, so I like that.
Well, what I love about what your perspective on this is, it reminds me of something we talked about with Scott Hebert when he first came on the show, which is the dichotomy of control. There are things within your control and things outside your control. You can't control the fact that your ground is clay, which makes it difficult to plant in, that you're going to have to take time and effort into putting more fertility into it. What you can control, though, is how you then go forward, which is using these containers for the peppers and the tomatoes. And at that, you're looking at the positives to this, which is fantastic, because too many people would look at this situation and immediately go to the negative.
Right. No, yeah, I mean, I've told people all the time, because people ask me how my farm is all the time. And I know they don't care. Like, they want to hear about my clay soil because they don't know that clay soil is bad. Mm-hmm. But I said, but when they ask me that, I think to myself, I can be really negative and complain about my clay soil, or I can be really positive and be like, man, I'm so excited I get to farm a different way. Mm-hmm. I've never farmed, or I don't even know if anyone commercially farms in buckets. I may be the first dude or first person to farm out of 20-gallon buckets and sell to grocery stores and a restaurant and a 20-person CSA. I may be the first person to be able to bucket farm at that scale. So it's an old cliche, but it really is your perspective on things. Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned it briefly, but what does your marketing look like? Where are you selling your products right now? Just kind of, again, it's been a while since we've talked, so has it changed since when we last talked?
Everything about my farm changes every single day. So I'm just going to throw out there, I pivot more times than I could ever possibly imagine. But as of today, I've sold to a grocery store for about 2 years. Okay. And it's been really good, family-owned, great people. It's been here 60 years. Everyone in Dallas knows who they are. So it's a really cool store. They opened a new one February 1st.
Oh, awesome.
And it's like, yeah, it's like 5 miles from the old one. I mean, from the first one. So I got in that one. So I sell to two grocery stores. They buy pretty much everything that I have. If I've got radishes that week, they buy them. If I got beets, they buy them. They want salad mix every single week. So, like, that's a given. They get salad mix every week. And then all the extra little stuff, onions and stuff, they get. And then I sell to a lot of the teachers at my school. It took them a few months to figure out that also was a farmer. But once they figured it out, and you know, I told, you know, they started talking to me about it, and they could just hear how passionate I was about it. They wanted to start buying from me. So I've got probably 15 teachers that buy pretty much anything that I grow. I just throw everything in like a Kroger sack and be like, here's your bag of stuff. And they give me a 20, you know, it could be a bag of, I usually value a bag of salad mix at $5. And then usually I do bunches of 250, like this bunch of radishes is, you know, 250. This bunch of carrots is 250. This bunch of onions is 250 until I get up to, you know, $15 or $20.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, so I call it a CSA. It's just the easiest way to explain it. So
it really
the
is.
Grocery store and then the CSA top style basket. Those are my two main things. And then I have a restaurant that just opened up in January that wants to buy a lot of my summer stuff. It's a pizza place, and they're very, like, they pride themselves on using, or, you know, local stuff because everything's built from scratch there. They have a clay oven. They have a clay built oven. So it has a different taste, and they just love fresh stuff. So they buy from me and a couple other farmers that grow stuff that I don't grow. So I'll be selling some stuff to them too.
You can't hear it necessarily over the microphone, but like my mouth is salivating at just the thought right now.
It's good, dude. I'm not going to lie to you. It's some good pizza.
Are there any new crops that you're going to try growing this year?
Celery. I think that's probably going to be the only thing that I grow that's new, and I'm going to grow it as a cut and come again. I'm not going to cut off the head. I've got some friends that do it here, and they can't sell it. But every single person that I sell baskets to, I've asked, hey, would you like some celery? And, like, I just don't eat it that much. I'm afraid I'd waste it. I said, well, this is how I sell it. I'll cut off 4 or 5 stalks, put a rubber band on it, and give it to you. Instead of selling you the whole plant, it actually works out better for me if I can cut, you know, each individual stalk, put a rubber band around it and give it to you, and then you don't have to eat the whole stalk in a week before it goes bad. So it works out both good for both of us because it grows back like kale does or whatever. And every single person's like, yes, I would love that. I just don't eat enough of it to warrant buying a whole plant.
Yeah.
Of it, you know, like you have to at the store. So I'm going to grow some celery. I'm going to try to grow some celery and see how that goes. But other than that, everything else will be, you know, just the basic, normal summer Texas stuff.
In 2019, you were actually visited by one of our fellow show guests here, Stephen Cornett from Nature's Always Right. And it was super cool to watch the video. I really enjoyed it. The thing I thought was really cool was how you laid out your salad mix, basically, and how you planted. Would you mind explaining a little bit about how you do that and why?
Yeah, so Stephen come out and he asked me, when you see pictures of like Rose Creek or some of these farms, they're all very organized and it looks really pretty and all the greens here and all the reds here and all, you know, all that. Mm-hmm. And small scale like I am, I don't have time to go home and mix everything. Like I just don't have time. Like that's just an inconvenience for me. So I was just in the middle of planting one day. I'm like, I'm an idiot. Why don't I plant the way it needs to be harvested so I don't have to go home and mix it? So I'll plant a green. At the time, I think I was growing 4 different types of lettuce. I had a green smooth leaf, a red smooth leaf, a green, it's not called sharp leaf. What's it called? Jagged cut. You know what I'm talking about? Like it's not like a nice smooth round. It's the Salanova green sweet crisp is what it is.
Okay.
And it's got a different look than the smooth does. And then I do the red. So I have 4 different types that look completely different. So I started planting them to where as I harvest and put them in the bucket, they're already mixed up. It's already mixed. I don't have to do any mixing and adding in or anything. And then on top of that, I would mix in, if it's during the summer, I would plant red Russian kale where a lettuce was supposed to go, a lettuce plant. And then I would just cut all that red Russian kale and put in there, and it was already mixed up. I didn't have to go cut red Russian kale four rows over and then come over and put it inside my salad mix.
Mm-hmm.
It was already in there, already mixed up and ready to go. And then during the fall and the winter and the spring, I do that with spinach.
Okay.
Now, am I losing some yield doing that? Yes. But I'm saving so much time not having to pick and mix and mat, you know, I don't have to mix it all up. It's already mixed up.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's a tremendous idea. It was watching the video, I'm sitting there going, my mind is blown. Because, yeah, I mean, you go to most farms and they have everything laid out, organized by color, blah, 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 blah. And yes, they can have value in that. But, I mean, it, just the sheer efficiency of not having to mix things up later. When you are a father, parent, husband, working full time, it makes a dramatic difference. You're trying to cut down the amount of unnecessary steps you have to make. And that is a great, great little thing that I loved.
Yeah. When you don't have, when you only have 24 hours a day, you have to sleep six and your other 18 hours are completely full. 5 minutes is a big deal.
Absolutely.
So anytime I can save 5 minutes doing something, even if it costs me more time up front, if it saves me 5 minutes a day, every day for the next 4 months, it's worth every second of the upfront work.
Absolutely. Now, Michael, as we kind of start to wrap up here, I'm just curious, what has you kind of most excited for this 2020 season?
Actually, I just got chills when you asked me that question. it's just the fact that I get to farm. I get to go to my farm every morning. I get to come home. I get to go back to my farm at night. I don't have more fun doing anything else. Then 10 o'clock at night when everyone's gone to bed, I'm at my farm potting tomatoes and, you know, planning out the next day's what I got to do the next day. Sometimes I just stand there and look around and I'm just so happy that I get to do what I get to do. And I mean, I could make you a list of 1,000 things that I'm excited about. I'm excited as stupid as it sounds. I'm really excited about growing in pots because it's something new. Mm-hmm. It's something that I've never really done before. And as, like I said earlier, I don't think anyone really grows in pots that's going to have the sales that I'm going to have. Like, I have to make this work because I've got restaurant, grocery store, and CSA customers waiting. This isn't a backyard deal where like, oh, I'm going to grow some tomatoes in a pot. Like, I have to do this on a commercial scale. Mm-hmm. And I can't find anyone else that's done that. I would love to, because I'd love to talk to them and pick their brains. So, like, I feel like I'm kind of breaking a frontier type way.
You're
in some
new
little
ground.
In some little niche way. So, I don't know, maybe 10 years from now, I've figured out a way to, you know, grow more, get bigger yield and less money and blah, blah, blah. And maybe there's a new way of farming moving forward. Who knows?
Well, I think it's awesome. I'm excited. I'm really going to look forward to continuing to follow your adventures. I know that you're very active on Instagram, but where can people go to learn more about you and your farm?
Really, Instagram is the place to go. I try to post as much as I can. I haven't posted about the pot, about growing in pots yet. And I'll be honest with you, Terrence, like, I'm excited about it, but I'm still kind of embarrassed to throw it out there because I have so many people that follow me that do this for like big time living, like Ray Tyler follows me and, you know, Rose Creek. And there's some really big names, you know, of Diego Footer likes my picture sometimes. And I'm almost embarrassed to say I'm a commercial grower growing in pots. So I haven't got the nerve to post the pots yet. I'm going to wait till everything at least looks good. And before I start posting stuff, but I am taking videos and pictures along the way. That way I can do a Throwback Thursday picture and say, this is when it really sucked. And this is when I really got started. And this is the very first pot that I planted. Like, I take tons of videos and pictures and stuff. Like, I'm going to post them and then I don't. And that's just my own insecurities. But
yeah,
I'm just not to the point yet that I want to post and let these big name guys that I've talked to for 3 years find out that I'm growing in pots.
Well, just remember, you're breaking new ground. You're trying new things. You're innovating.
That's the way I keep looking at it. You know, that's the way I keep, you know, trying to be positive about it and everything. Because if it was up to me, honestly, I would love to have an 80-foot row of tomatoes in the ground, mm-hmm. you know, buried 3 feet deep and ready to go. But that's not my circumstance right now, so I'll make the best of it with my pots and see what happens.
Well, I'm excited. Michael, thank you again for joining us on the show.
Yeah, sure, man. I'd love to come back and let you know how it goes in a few months.
You're on.
All right, dude, you have a great night. Thanks for having me on, buddy.
Big thanks to Michael for joining us on the show today. You can keep up with his farm activities by following him on Instagram at Dallas Half Acre Farm. All of this, of course, will be linked in the show notes. If you're new to the show, please subscribe on whatever your podcast player of choice is. While you are there, please leave us a rating and review, especially on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow the show. For tips on how to do this, please go to intellectualagrarian.com/review. Thanks again for listening. This has been Terrence Salehu and the Intellectual Agrarian Podcast, reminding you to keep farming the dream.